And my last question to you both, for teachers and students who really want to get to grips with this history, what are your top picks for what they should be reading?
So I think the thing with teaching at A-level generally with any subject is the subject knowledge is overwhelming, particularly if it's something that you've not learned at university. So one book that helped me quite a lot because it was quite a concise narrative was Wardens, The Making of Modern South Africa. It just offers that nice narrative. You can just take out excerpts of it because he talks about everything that's mentioned in the specification. So you can always use those parts of that interpretation to lead a lesson. So even if this part of the exam isn't an interpretations question, I still think you should bring in interpretations into it just to teach a historically rigorous course. The book that really hooked me in to this topic was Pogrin's How Can Man Die Better, which is his biography of Zabukwe. And I think that that was quite powerful for understanding the inner workings of the ANC, for understanding those points about Africanism and the limits to the way that the ANC was advocating for that, for understanding obviously Sobukwe's differing position, as well as what happens at Sharpeville, the kind of thinking behind that. And I think that book actually really heavily influenced an inquiry I did, which was, why was Sobukwe the most dangerous man in South Africa? And like going back on what students know and going from their preconceptions, obviously everything they know is about Mandela and a sanitized version of Mandela as well. So it's really good to set up about this idea of the most dangerous man in South Africa, having not only just being on Robben Island, but being in his own individual prison in Robben Island and kept separately from the rest of the people held captive there. And they often think that the person that you're talking about is Mandela. The fact that there's a clause that's put in place to keep him imprisoned indefinitely. And then when they find out that it's not Mandela, it's this other person called Sobukwe, they're suddenly like incredibly curious. How could he be so dangerous? What could he have done for the government to fear him so much? Because they've been quite hooked in on that question, I've been able to give them just chapters from Pogrin's book, which they'll read at home, because it's accessible, so they can read it themselves, and they become very interested in him as a figure. And I think that's quite a powerful way in. Obviously, we don't want to teach just about individuals, but I think sometimes individuals could be a powerful vehicle to understanding wider events that are happening.
I love that idea for an inquiry about Sobukwe. And William, what about you? What are your top South African reads?
I think Mandela's biography, for all that it has been read by so many, nevertheless, it's worth encouraging students to read it. And also, Tom Lodge wrote a shortish, good biography of him. And for all that we don't want to reduce South African history to Mandela, he is quite a pivotal figure. And in current debates, offers something, I think, of a corrective or alternative to the increased emphasis that I hear on race. Although non-racialism is a position that's very difficult to exercise or fulfill entirely in all kind of political action or social action, it is an idea that comes through quite strongly in his book. I also think that ideas of tolerance do come through quite strongly. My concern at the moment in South Africa and elsewhere is that even somebody who was oppressed and who spent so long in prison and could justifiably be very bitter, Mandela is able to rise above that, especially in the public sphere, and to act as a statesman. And that seems to me important. So that's a pitch for Mandela. I find also that novels are worth using, and I've always used them in teaching students. So, for example, Mbulela Mzimani on the Children of Soweto, I think, is the most vivid attempt to recreate what it was like to be inside the school children's revolt. There's a strong strand of social realism in quite a lot of South African fiction, and it comes close to biography in that respect, collective biography. This goes right back to novels like Alan Paton, Cry the Beloved Country, or Modikwa Dikobe and the Marabi Dance about the slums of Johannesburg. So that's just another suggestion for students who want to learn about South Africa. And then just one last point. Teaching is, I expect, like publishing, it's very difficult to know the precise result. You have students who you try to immerse in what is close to your heart and important and what you've put a lot of work into. And I would say on the whole, the undergrad students that I taught over many years at Bristol went away, as far as I could see from the essays and exams, with innovative ways of looking at the world and ways that might well have challenged what they came to university with. And for me, that's a justification of history.
Yeah, I agree, actually. Obviously, my students are much younger coming through and learning it, but I do think that it's quite a transitional course for them. I get a lot of emails from different classes who say that how learning about that has changed much of how they view things and made them quite active participants in their seminar rooms and things. And I think that's incredibly important. Also, what you mentioned about Mandela, I think that's really true. So I think because the political narrative has sanitized him, and Akala writes a chapter in Natives called Why Do White People Love Mandela? And in it, he talks about this sanitization of Mandela. And it's because with a lot of politicians, they want to put forward this idea of being peaceful and waiting for change creates change. So because you're morally right, eventually you'll win out. So within this narrative, Mandela effectively is the ultimate freedom fighter because he asked for freedom. He was put in prison. And while he was waiting in prison, everybody was like, he's so correct. We're going to change this and overthrow apartheid, and we're just going to have democracy, and it's going to be this great rainbow nation. And I think what's happened, and it's for no fault of his own, the sanitized narrative has turned a lot of people off of Mandela as well, saying he's not enough, or maybe he was too compliant and things like that. And I think the same thing has happened with the anti-apartheid movement in London, where people now will critique them as being charitable and being white savior in saying they need to help save Black Africans in South Africa. But actually, if you really look at that history and that narrative and interrogate it properly, you'll see a lot of it with the anti-apartheid movement, with the trade union movements as well, it was about solidarity rather than charity. It was people who were in exile, who had to leave South Africa, giving instruction to trade unions about how best to support the movement, not to run it and lead it. So I think leaving room for that kind of nuance and allowing students to say those things about white saviorism or being complicit or critiquing these figures is important, but then allowing them to see the more complicated part of the story and doing that through getting them to read from activists themselves and their experiences, as well as from historians. So it's not just, especially me as a white teacher, trying to put forward a complicated narrative, but allowing the experiences of people who were there to talk about it.
I love that, using history as an antidote to cynicism. But it's also really interesting that even between the two of you, there's different perspectives or emphasis on Mandela's legacy, whether it should be thought of primarily as a legacy of non-racialism and tolerance, or a legacy that merits radical critique. And I think once again, it just points to the very contested nature of this history. Unfortunately, I think we're out of time, but I just want to thank you both, William and Kira, for joining today.